shell shock.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Joey Galvez here with another episode of Shell Shock, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle podcast. And I've got my good buddy, Paul, and he is the Casey Jones to my Raphael. How's it going, Paul?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, man. Hey, are you excited about this episode?
I am, because we are going to do stuff differently. We are going to shake it up. So I've been thinking about this. And I know you'll introduce like the pattern we're gonna follow with this episode. So you're like the cool tones to my hot tones. I'm the Michelangelo and Raphael. You're the Leonardo and you're the Donatello. You like a little formula. I like a little craziness. And we've been working it out. So this is our fourth time recording, our third episode. We actually recorded one other podcast together before this even, on top of the zero episode. So we're getting used to each other. We're feeling it out.
Right.
I saw some things that you're good at, and I saw some ways that I thought that you would like some changes and some new challenges. And you brought up to me before we started recording a way you'd like to shake yourself up a little bit. My goal going forward in this podcast is to get your passion to flame you out of your mold. But also, you have a lot of reading to do, so we decided that it would be a good idea, and this would be great for listeners too. Instead of just being totally random with the books that we do, we're going to start reading the IDW Ninja Turtle series from the beginning. And we're going to cover an arc and episode on top of doing some of the other fun things that we like to do. So we're not just going to be formulaic and just, okay, four issues done. We're going to still do a bunch of other fun stuff, talk about different aspects and dynamics of the Ninja Turtle universe. I will let you now say the structure of this episode, because this will be kind of how we're doing it going forward.
If we feel like we get a little boring here and there, we might shake it up again, and we might knock your shells off again a little bit here and there and kind of shake it up. Just because, you know, I'm one of those guys that when I listen to podcasts, I don't like to listen to the same kind of thing and it kind of drones on, you know what I mean? So I'm that kind of guy that's like, oh, well, I've been listening to these guys for months and months, and it's the same thing. I wish they would kind of shake it up a little bit and keep my interest. So, hey, we might do that here. We might not. Well, we like to make stuff that we love to listen to over here. This week, we're going to be talking about number 1 through 4 of the IDW TMNT series. And then we're going to kind of go into a little bit of the secret of the segment. This week, we're going to be talking about how Eastman and Laird began and how they got their start. And then we've got something that we're going to be introducing, something really kind of fairly new, kind of tweaked a little bit. We're going to call it Mikey's Long Box. And this is something where, you know, Paul's going to come in and he's going to grab something out of the long box that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, whether I can read it or find it, because I found sometimes there's some things out there that you can't really find digitally. And I'm the guy that does the digital, and Paul's the guy that does, you know, he gets the floppies, he gets the hardcovers, he gets the trades. So he's going to pull some random book out of his long box. We're going to talk about it. And if I can't find it, what we'll do is I'll kind of talk about where you can find it and how much that costs and if it's worth kind of grabbing that digitally or a physical copy. And then we're going to go into character spotlight. And this week we're going to be talking about Casey Jones. And then we're going to end the show with some trivia. And the trivia is we're going to try to keep it, you know, close to what we've read in the arcs and kind of see if you guys are still on your toes there a little bit. And maybe he's going to keep me on my toes this week because he's got the trivia this week. And then we'll end out the show there.
I am going to burn you down this week. I am out for blood after your technically incorrect question last time.
You know
so
what?
I'm going to...
Hey, we took the Twitter. We took the Twitter, and I won that one, man.
Yeah, and you know what? Twitter was wrong, because the way you ordered the question left it open.
You know what?
But I'm...
you're right.
As much as I may bring the randomness to this this podcast recording, anyways, we'll just move on, okay? We're going to get right into the first four issues.
Let me give you the benefit of the doubt here really quick. You know, you were half right, because in the
I was 100% right.
I'm gonna give you half of that.
You asked what they called it. You asked what they called it, not what it should have been called.
I'm going to give you half right, because in the books, they say katana, but in actuality, somebody who practices the art of ninjutsu would use a ninjato. Just saying.
Hey, it's not my fault if he uses a katana and he's dumb. you know, those cool tone guys don't always know what they're doing. So here's the thing. I'm 100% right, first of all. Second of all, it's always good to have something to argue about. Gets the blood pumping.
There you go.
A little bit. So we're going to talk about issue 1 through 4. Now, we kind of discussed how we should continue from that point, because one of the things that's been cool about the Ninja Turtles series is they have always had something else running alongside it.
Yeah.
You know, since early on, like they started having the Heroes miniseries, and they had the Villains miniseries. They've had all kinds of other stuff running alongside. The IDW hardcover collections collect everything in reading order.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do a crazy amount of issues. We would like to read it in reading order. So the first 4 issues is easy. It straight up matches up with the first trade. After that, it may not always match up perfectly.
Right, which was really awesome to find, because those ones were really easy to find. And there was tons of them out there. There was like 2 or 3 different trades, and then there was the hardcover collection, the ultimate collection, or whatever they're calling it, which was really awesome and really easy to find. So I'm excited about that. Let's go ahead and get into the first arc.
Let's kick shell!
We're proud to be a member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
All right, in this arc, we see Raphael, but he's all alone. He's been separated from his brothers from day 1. As the Turtles are out looking for Raph, they encounter Old Hob, a crusty old cat who was mutated around the same time they were. Meanwhile, Raph is out and he encounters a father beating his son, and it is none other than Casey Jones. Him and Casey Jones click up, and they go out and bust some heads. Casey, Raph, and the Turtles all converge on Old Hob, and they reunite again. At the end, you've got Raph and Splinter hugging it out. Why don't you give us a creator roll call, Paul?
All right, so I'll go ahead and do a little creator roll call here. This is right from the table of contents for the Ultimate Collection. So the story is by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz. So right off the bat, it's pretty awesome that Kevin Eastman's involved in like everything.
Yeah.
The script is by Tom Waltz. The layouts are by Kevin Eastman, but the art is by Dan Duncan. Colors by Rhonda Pattison, and letters by Robbie Robbins in the first issue, and then Sean Lee in the following 3 issues. So you have a cohesiveness to the creative team. Tom Waltz has been involved in this book like from beginning to end, pretty much. At least the main title. You'll see his name all over the place as we go through this. Obviously, Kevin Eastman also has been involved in pretty dang much everything. One of the cool things going through this Ultimate Collection, there's a lot of variants with Ninja Turtle books, like especially these early ones. IDW does a decent amount of variants. They generally have like an A cover. The B cover is usually Kevin Eastman now. Back early on, they didn't call them A covers, and B covers is a little different. But one of the cool things is one of these issues actually has in the hardcover book here, it shows a cover that's done by Walt Simonson. Now, the first time I saw this cover, I didn't know who Walt Simonson was. And now I know who Walt Simonson
is.
Cover. Yeah, so that's pretty awesome. So we start off right off the bat with action. The Turtles, but there's only 3 of them. 3 Turtles, 1 rat fighting a bunch of guys and a cat.
when I first saw this, I was like, I think I messaged you. I was like, dude, am I in the right place here? Because I was like, they've got a mutated cat here. And I was like, well, I don't know if I remember the Turtles' first book, starting off this way. So
yeah.
I was like, I messaged you. You're like, yeah, you're in the right place.
Yeah.
I was like, all right.
So you can see already, and we discussed this before, but every iteration of the Turtles doesn't necessarily have a black and white exactly the same origin story. There's the basic bones that are the same of the origin story, but it's not always the same. So in this one, Old Hob is an integral character right off the bat. Now, I will let you know right off the bat, I have never been a big fan of Old Hob. I think he's a little bit of a boring character. I think he's actually finally gotten better, but through so much of it, I felt like he was kind of flat.
Okay.
But going back and reading this, I actually like his involvement in the origin story a little bit better than maybe the first go around. I still think as a character at this point, like the developed character of Old Hob is a little bit on the boring side. But they fill him out more. Like here he just feels kind of like a stereotype a little bit. But yeah, so they're fighting. Then it jumps into showing Raphael wandering around. Then it shows the scientist in the lab, and you get April O'Neil there, who's an intern at Stock Gen. One of the cool things about this, so like obviously they're taking a heritage that has already been built. So they're not starting from scratch and building the pieces out. So they're able to tie things together right off the bat. And one of the things you'll see as you go on too, is there are a lot of things that when you read this first issue, if you read it when it came out, a lot of these characters may not be more than what they seem at the moment. But eventually, maybe they are.
Right.
They're tying some things together, like Stock Gen is like April working for Stock Gen. She worked for Baxter Stockman in the original comic. But then, if you look at the cartoon, which is where you take a lot of your knowledge of the Turtles from at the moment,
she was a reporter.
Yeah. So she had nothing to do with Baxter Stockman in that one. So you get some of the story. You meet Baxter Stockman. I like that he's a black guy and not a white guy. So they're going back to the original Baxter Stockman, not the nerdy white guy that they didn't want to make fun of people that weren't white, basically.
But this guy's not a bumbling idiot like that version.
Exactly. And in the original cartoon, he was a joke. He was a fool. And in this one, he's a very put together person. So you progress on, then you get to Raph stumbling upon Casey getting beat by his dad, and then he kicks down the
door. I love that. I love right before that, though. He pulls out a t-shirt out of the garbage and it says Cowabunga, and he's like, yeah, really?
Yep.
For real?
That is awesome. So
I love that.
You get some great throwbacks, obviously, to the merchandising culture of TMNT.
Right. Yeah. And because that was a huge part of it, right? And especially in the 90s, that was a big huge part of the Ninja Turtles. You know, everybody knew about the Ninja Turtles because of the merchandising.
Yep. Yeah, like Ninja Turtles and Simpsons merchandise like crazy. One of the things I like about Dan Duncan's art too, and you can see it really well just in this very last page, it's a like full page single page spread here with Raph with his fists up ready to fight.
I love the way he's like holding his fists up too. It's like old school style, like from the Fighting Irish.
Exactly. Yeah. The kind of
fisticuffs,
typical fists up, ready to fight, put up your dukes. But Dan Duncan, I feel like his art, portrays movement and action really well. I don't think his art is always maybe as consistently crisp as it is now. But I think that's fine. I like the feel of the Turtles. Like they have a more solid feel, and I love a lot of the artists that we've had on the Turtle book, but some of, like, especially now, like the way it's been the last couple years or so, they feel a touch more cartoony, if that makes sense, like a little more like aimed at matching the cartooniness of the cartoon that was running. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but that's one of the things I liked about Dan Duncan's art, is they just feel a little more solid, a little edgier. There's a part later on that we'll get to when Raph is fighting Hob and he chomps down on Hob's arm with his like big old chompers. I think that's great because he has these big old flat teeth and he's chomping down on his arm. It's just, I like it.
The second book is awesome too, because they give you a little bit more in depth to kind of Casey's life a little bit. And when I was first reading this, I was like, well, what the heck? This isn't Casey. But then you kind of go through the book a little bit and they talk about, you know, his mom has some cancer and his dad just kind of went downhill. He became an alcoholic. And, you know, the way I took it as Casey was already, you know, kind of going out in the night and being this vigilante, because he's like, oh, hold up, let me go get this stuff real quick. And he comes out with his weapons and his hockey mask, and they kind of go out into the night and, you know, kind of do their vigilante thing. So I took it as, you know, he's been doing this for quite some time. And even Raph says, hey, dude, you know, you took those guys out pretty quickly. Like, why do you take that kind of stuff from your dad, you know? And he's like, yo, my mom, you know, made me promise not to fight back and not to argue with them and not to just, so I'm just kind of, you know, honoring my mother. So I love that aspect of it. And I love, you know, he's strong enough to take his dad out, but he doesn't out of respect for his mother, and I love that.
Yeah, you know, I find reading the second issue again, like the first time I read it, it just kind of struck me as like, okay, they're showing Casey, like, we're not surprised by who he is. But reading it again and just like really thinking about who the character we're being presented is, not the character that we already know from past iterations.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're taking it from past iterations, like the original cartoon series, he was a parody of Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
You know, the original comic series, he was fairly different than he's presented in this. So having read this for so long now and going back, I'm like, oh, look at this. It's like a kid who's getting beat by his dad. He's used to getting kicked around by the world. So he's kind of like, I don't sweat it about it, you know? But then you get to the end and he's like, he puts on a hockey mask and has a couple of bats in his hands to go beat people. Like, that's pretty sick. Uh-huh. You know, that's like, okay, Casey's got a little touch of twistedness to him, you know? So when you think about that and like, okay, think about that as you see what he's doing. Like, he has this, it feels totally natural to him to just, you know, put on a hockey mask and go out with some baseball bats. Just, I'm going to go beat people up that deserve it. At least that, you know, he's aiming to do it to people who deserve it. But like,
right.
That's more of a shocking reveal when I thought about it than the first time I saw it. So I did enjoy that. Also in this issue, you get to see the, kind of the next stage of the birth of the mutants. April's working at Stock Gen, but she's like studying there after hours. The Foot Clan break in, but you don't know they're the Foot Clan yet. They're just ninjas. They break in. She's just trying to get out of there with her life. Splinter gets the turtles out of there. Splinter's just a rat.
Yeah.
He pulls the fire alarm, call the cops, kind of helps April escape. And then the Foot ninjas have the turtles in a sack, and Splinter jumps on one of them and either claws or bites at his face to get him to drop the bag. He gets thrown off too, and then Old Hob comes along as just a cat and grabs one of the turtles, and that's where it cuts away, and then it cuts to the Splinter and the three turtles in the sewer.
They're all doused in this green ooze-like substance. You see Old Hob has one of the turtles in his mouth there. So it kind of gives you this insight to why Raphael separated and how he came separated. You know, another thing that I noticed in this, in these first four arcs was that this was just a handful of months later. I think it said like 18 months or something like that later from the moment that they were dropped into the sewer in that puddle of ooze. So they kind of grew within the span of 18 months to the point to where they are here. They're this intelligent, you know, ninja fighting clan of turtles. I thought that was really interesting. I was like, wow, that's pretty quick for them to mutate that fast. I always was under this impression that it took a little bit longer.
Yeah. And, you know, different iterations have presented it in different ways. Like, you look at the most recent movies, for example, and in the first one, when it shows them mutate, they're children and they age into who they are. And in this one, it's 15 months later, actually. Yeah. And the ooze by the next day, they're basically the size that they are. And they're very quickly grasping language and communication and stuff like that.
Quickly.
Splinter obviously was already like Splinter. And they explain this some that they're being tested on in different ways.
Uh-huh.
So Splinter has more consciousness when even before he touches the mutagen. So it makes sense. It kind of gives you that, you know, basis where Splinter is the one who is able to help them develop, but they're able to come along quickly. I mean, after 15 months, they're as intelligent as we ever expect them to be. You know, they're fully intelligent at that point. So
yeah, it's almost immediate as you're flipping through. I think it's number 3 or 4 that we're looking at here, that they mutate so quickly and their intelligence kind of grows so quickly, because almost immediately Splinter's speaking and then some of the other turtles are speaking too, and they're already kind of almost full grown as well. So I thought that was really interesting there, and it was really cool to see.
Yeah. And then we get that awesome Walt Simonson cover. I always loved that cover too. Those chunky, chunky turtles. Then we get into issue number 3 here, and it starts off with Casey and Raph, beating thugs that are stealing purses from old ladies. What's interesting here too is, you know, Raph is pretty comfortable with kind of jumping in, but Casey's totally the one taking the lead. Raph still doesn't really know who he is. He doesn't know his name's Raph. I mean, he doesn't know anything yet. You cut back to the turtles. They're arguing with Splinter about should they keep looking. You jump back to more of the origin where, Splinter is fighting with Hob to free the turtle that he has in his mouth, and he bites one of Hob's eyes out, which sends Hob running. And then the Foot are coming to get the turtles, and he escapes with 3 of them into the sewers, and the 4th one he wasn't able to recover. that's also the part where, as you were saying, you see them by the next day. Splinter gets up and he's talking already. So everything is starting to converge here by the end of the third issue, where Hob finds Casey and Raph. Like, Hob is really out for vengeance here. Like, he is not happy that his eye got bit out. He's not happy being a mutant. I don't know how in 15 months he became such a gang leader here, but,
I know. That's what I was thinking too. Like, how did he get this kind of a following?
Yeah. And you see his viciousness. So I don't think they ever really tell this story of how he gets this gang behind him, but like,
right.
Okay. He was an alley cat. He was used to fighting and scrapping and doing what he had to do. So, I mean, he very well could have stumbled into a gang and then killed the leader and kind of, you know, took over the gang by force that way.
Yeah.
He's obviously quite ruthless.
You see that he's kind of clicking up here with Baxter Stockman.
So this is like right after it happened, and he's like he's up there standing and talking. So you can see obviously this mutagen is pretty fast acting.
Yeah, because he's fully grown and he's intelligent. He's speaking and he's got this ooze dripping off almost. So it had to happen in the same day, because they're still cleaning up all the remnants of the craziness that happened with the ninja and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting. So I had a question for you here. You did your spotlight on Fugitoid. So is this the guy who Fugitoid becomes here, or is it a different iteration of him?
Very good question. So yeah, Chet is the Fugitoid, and that will be clearly unveiled at some point in the future. Fugitoid actually has his own, you know, I mentioned that it starts into the, like, the Heroes micro series where you get one featuring each character. Fugitoid has his own issue in the midst of those eight issues. I don't remember, honestly, if that's where they tell that Fugitoid is Chet.
Okay.
I'm guessing it probably is, but yeah, that's who he is. So you don't know that that's who he is yet, but like, look how many key characters are involved in this first arc already, even without you knowing who they are.
Really, really interesting. I liked that. When I read it, I was like, wait a minute. I kind of had to like look it up again. And I was like, oh, that's who he was talking about on the last episode. So this was really cool to see.
I was wondering if you were going to remember that. That may be involved in trivia somewhat. Who knows?
Oh, watch out.
So awesome. Yeah, so you back to the fight. You get them fighting, and then the three brothers show up, and Raph at this point is kind of realizing, he's remembering what happened, because he has no clue what happened.
Yeah,
so Hob kind of unleashes that memory right before he's planning on killing Raph here. But then the brothers show up and kind of save the day. You get a big old fight. Turtles gain the upper hand. Raph is ready to kill Hob. Leonardo stops him. I think it's Donatello is like, well, Hob's just going to do it again. So, I mean, you really see this with the Turtles at this point, where Leonardo's following Splinter's directions. You know, he's very much the loyal son. And the other ones are still like, I mean, Donatello's like, yeah, maybe he should just kill Hob, because Hob's just going to keep on doing this. And Leo says, no, we're not killing.
Yeah, that's not what we do. Yeah.
Yeah, you see Raph quite happy with this moment of being reunited. Casey's quite confused that now there's four turtles. One of my problems earlier on in this series with how, and it's illustrated here with how Casey is written, but I feel like at times, you'll see it in April and in other characters that we haven't met yet, but I feel like there are periods where they just don't know how to write the young adults in this series. Like, they all sound like they have the same voice, and it's really kind of a little just relying on like cliche ways of talking, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay.
So that's something that through these first four issues, I feel like Casey, like, his dialogue is not really portraying much character in itself. They do like build his character well though, so it's not totally lost, but I mean, like, he kind of has the same voice even as like old Hob. He's just like, you know, they clearly show you who Casey is, and old Hob is left a little, you know, a little bit looser. But that's something that throughout this series, that's the one fault that I have at times with the writing, is I feel like the youthful characters, they get lazy with the writing on it.
Huh.
So that'll be my one critique at this point. I don't think it's something that's problematic or anything, but it just, it is something that at times I'm like, oh, come on, you can do that a little bit better.
I love this last page here of this arc. You know, you see the turtles, they're all back together, all four of them. They walk in, they see Splinter, and they just hug it out.
Yeah. It's great. So
I think I sent that to you earlier today when we were tweeting out about this episode. And I was like, hey man, this is a good one here. And I sent out that last page there. It was funny.
Yeah. So good ending. So four issues. They basically tell the origin story while also telling other things that's going on. I like that they did it that way and they didn't just like pound out the origin story in the first issue.
Yeah. Because
you get that way too much, you know, where the origin story is just like, there it is, you know. This was done better. It was interweaving things.
Yeah, and they kind of give you the little bit of the conflict between the, you know, the turtles, how they kind of want to do their own thing. They think that, hey, man, maybe we should do it this way. But then, you know, no, we gotta listen to Master Splinter. He knows what he's doing, you know? And then they're kind of gaining their own kind of personality and their own traits, right? So I love that we have this kind of internal, conflict going on between the turtles and what they should do, what they shouldn't do, and how they need to do things and go about it. I love that because, you know, this is them just beginning and starting out, right? So it's really cool to see.
That's something that you'll see throughout. One of the issues that we talked about on one of our first couple of episodes was the Michelangelo macro series.
Yeah.
And I was fawning over that. And as you read through this, like once you build up to the point where you've actually read everything and then you read that issue, you'll feel a lot more of the gravity of what's going on with who Splinter has become over time. Because right here, you see the Splinter you expect. The leader.
Yeah, he's
the loving father.
Warm and loving. And yeah. Caring. And
yes, seeing over the course of like 150 comics, how he gets from there to where he's at the point we're at now, basically.
It's completely different.
Yeah, you're building all that weight. So you're going to love it when you get back around to some of the more recent issues that you've read and seeing like how they've built up to that. That is definitely one of the things they've done great.
Is it going to make me like, because right now I'm sitting here thinking, man, I love Splinter. He's awesome. It's almost like today I kind of talked to you a little bit. We were at the doctor's office with my kids and, one of my kids was going to have a quick in office procedure done and mom had to leave and the kid was like, you know, kind of almost on the verge of tears, not really on the verge of tears, but like, I want mom here because mom's the comforter. You know, this is what I feel here with Splinter. He's the comforter. Right. And in the last episode where we talked about, you know, that macro series, that was not the comforter. That was not this Splinter here. And that one almost made me sit here think, man, you're a crotchety old man. I'm sorry, guys, if that's, should I bleep myself there? but no, he's a crusty old man and he's hard and he's getting it done because he needs to, you know, so he's not this loving, caring man that we see here.
Yeah. You see, like the conflict is built over time. So you see, like you'll have conflicting feelings about Splinter once you get into that stage of the story.
Yeah.
So it's not that you just, it's easier if a character just turns and you can feel 100% against them. It's a lot harder when it's not that simple.
Yeah.
So yeah, but this is the good loving Splinter, his sons. We're just getting started with everything. I mean, we don't even know that those ninjas are the Foot Clan yet. I mean, yeah. It's pretty obvious if you know anything about turtles, but, right. Next time we'll be talking about the next about four issues, because there's also a little, story called A Lot to Learn. I actually have to look up and remember where that is taken from, because it's not an issue. It's just a story. It's just an about 8-page story.
Okay.
But so we'll be discussing that. Issue 5, the Raphael micro-series, the Michelangelo micro-series, and then issue 6. So that's what we'll be discussing next time and getting on to the next part of the story. Do you have any final things to discuss on this first arc?
No, I love this story. I love the origin story that we get here in this IDW series. You know, because it's different. It's different than anything that I've seen. I love that we see another mutant who was born at the same time they were. And it was really cool. And he becomes like an arch nemesis right off the bat. And it's not Shredder. So I love that. That was really cool to see. And I am definitely looking forward to seeing where they're going to go with this. I am definitely looking forward to seeing where they go with Casey Jones's story. And this was really cool because Casey Jones has a really, he's one of those characters as well that's got a different origin story in a handful of different iterations. So I really like this iteration. This one was really cool. It kind of, it's really good.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting that they, Shredder is their major nemesis through all their history. He's not even involved in the beginning of the story.
Right,
I mean, in the original comic, he was killed in the first issue. So, big difference. Big shift there.
Difference, right, yeah. Cool, right, man.
So what do we got coming up next?
I think we got Secret of the Segment coming up, and we're going to be calling this one Eastman and Laird Begins. Let's go ahead and move on to that.
Spoiler alert, this is a short story. Kevin Eastman was born in Portland, Maine, so already you have the most important fact that he is a Mainer, which already makes the quality of everything better. Side note, this does involve Laird, but he went to school with Steve Levine, who was heavily involved in a lot of the early Ninja Turtles stuff. He did he did lettering in a lot of the comics. He did a lot of the packaging design for the toys. He did a lot of stuff. So Steve Levine is somebody who is a big component of the early TMNT world.
Cool.
Kevin Eastman went to school with him. So in 1983, that's when he met Peter Laird. So he's about, I think I figured out he was about 21 at that time, and Peter Laird was about 29. So Kevin Eastman's a decent chunk younger, so you have a little bit of a difference between the two that way. And Peter Laird was from, he's from Massachusetts. They met in Northampton, Massachusetts, which if you hear Northampton,
Casey,
if you know anything about Ninja Turtles, you should know that there's a story that takes a place in Northampton in like every iteration pretty much. So that's obviously.
Isn't that where Casey's from?
Yeah, that's where the farm is that they go back to.
The farmhouse.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll definitely be talking more about Northampton in the future. So basically, Kevin Eastman goes down to Massachusetts. He ends up stumbling into Peter Laird because he's trying to find work doing illustration stuff. Peter Laird's illustrating for some little newspaper. They just kind of start screwing around together. They accidentally create Ninja Turtles goofing around.
That's awesome.
So that literally gets you to the point where Ninja Turtles is created. There's not really much to the story beyond that. They stumbled into each other. Uh-huh. They kind of tried to do stuff and they goofed around and they accidentally stumbled onto creating one of the biggest things ever.
That's hilarious. That's awesome.
There's your history really lesson.
Cool. That's pretty awesome, man. So is that the reason why you moved to Portland, Maine?
No, but it was a plus. My wife is from Maine, but she came to California and met me, but it was just a sign, like everything was meant to go this way. Cause not only, you know, did I grow up a Ninja Turtle fan, but the music that I was most into, at that time, is still the music that I'm most into, some underground hip hop stuff. Two of my favorite artists were from Maine, and several others were from this general area, Rhode Island, Eastern Canada. Like moving to Maine, like I already had all these people that were from Maine that were influences on me.
That's pretty awesome. So you and your wife's story is kind of like Eastman and Laird's. You guys stumbled in upon each other.
Sort of, yeah.
That's pretty awesome, dude. That's cool. I enjoy that. That was awesome. I didn't know that about those guys. That was really
cool. What's interesting is at that point, like they accidentally do this thing. We'll talk about this more later, but they accidentally create this thing. They put a lot into getting it started, and they're just expecting to do this like one-off issue. And it was so popular, they kept doing more, and it just exploded. They get more involved in the business of it, and it's starting to bog down their ability to do the creative side of it. So it doesn't take long to get to that point. We'll talk about that more in the future, though.
Cool. Yeah, man, this sounds pretty interesting. All right, man, that was a really cool little insight into how Eastman and Laird got their beginnings. So let's go ahead and move on to the next segment, and we're going to be calling that Mikey's Long Box.
I thought you'd want to get home to watch Saturday morning cartoons.
Ah! It's Saturday already? Hang on tight. This is an emergency. Follow me.
What's the big freaking emergency?
Only the most important event in the known universe. Free Comics Day.
Free Comics Day. Gentlemen,
our pleasure. If loving comics is wrong, ow, I don't want to be right.
All right. So for people who have listened to me podcasting for for longer than this. They may know that I actually did a podcast years ago called Ivar's Long Box with Martin from many Nerdy Legion podcasts. He and I co-founded the first podcast, the Valiant Central podcast. Ivar's Long Box spawned out of that, and it was a podcast we did with our friend Josh Eves, and we would randomly pick old Valiant comics to talk about. So I wanted to do Mikey's Long Box and kind of carry on some of my podcasting heritage into this. And it also gives us a chance to, as you mentioned earlier in the show, jump around and look at different Ninja Turtle comics throughout their history. I thought about what to do for this week, and I wanted to start with the first issue of one of my favorite stories of the original Mirage run. It's issue number 50, and it is the first issue of City at War, which is a 13-part story. And the couple issues before it were sort of like a prequel setting it up. One of the great things about this run, too, is the covers are fantastic. If you want to delve into checking out Ninja Turtle comics, like the getting the individual issues, 50 to 62 is a good chunk to pick up because they're not as expensive as some of the really early issues. But the story is great. The art on the covers is fantastic.
But it's so hard to find.
Well, it's hard to find digitally because...
Yeah.
So right now, like, these are collected in the hardcovers that IDW has done. IDW also has been releasing the Color Classics, which is the original comics recolored. But they're releasing those one a month, and they aren't super duper far into it. I don't know all of what they've released with that.
Yeah, that far yet.
So that's the thing, is because IDW has the property and they're releasing it this way. Like, pretty much right now, the only way you can easily find City at War is by either physically or digitally picking up the TMNT, the Ultimate Collection, Volume 4.
Yeah, and you can find it. You know, you can find it on. You showed me a really cool site which I love, by the way, called In Stock Trades. So if you wanted the physical copy, you can find it there. And it's not cheap, guys. You know, it's about $35 it's going to run you. And if you're my wife listening out there, that's not a good price for you, for you to have. I mean, but it's a really good book to have on your shelf, but you can go on Comixology and found it for about $20 on there right now as we speak.
Comixology has a lot of sales. So that's a key thing to do, is watch for sales. Like, I've seen this as low as like $10 on Comixology.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you could find a really good sale, you know, pick this one up for that price, because, you know, you're either going to get a physical copy for, you know, just $10-15 more than what you would get it on Comixology.
So. Yeah. And the cover price is $50. So that $35 is with a pretty good discount. It's like 30% off on in-stock trade.
But if you're a cheapskate like me and it's like, that's a pretty big price point for you.
Yeah. But that's because you waste all your money on those crappy Batman comics.
Hey, you know what?
All right, so let's...
You better watch out.
Let's dive into this issue. So at this point in the overall story of the Turtles, everything is kind of segmented. Everybody has kind of split up and gone their separate ways. I didn't read a whole bunch of comics that, like, leading up to this or anything. I just read this one issue, so I had to do, like, a little bit of poking around to remember. Because it's been quite a while since I've read this. But Casey went off on his own. He ended up meeting a woman who was pregnant. She died. He kept the kid to raise as his own because they've got married. It's probably a key point there. They got married. She died.
We'll get into that a little bit later when we talk about his
Good. Spotlight. So you'll talk about this and you'll clear that up some. And we also actually, when we talked about the Urban Legends book, we got a little bit of a hint of this. And of course, Urban Legends isn't canon, but it was continuing off of this. So he's off on his own. Yeah. April's off on her own. Splinter's off on his own. The Turtles are still all together as the four of them. But so as you go through this book, I mentioned this to you when we were talking about it, but there's almost no words in this book, no dialogue. I believe there is no dialogue in this book. So as you go through the images, and the art's just great in this, like, it starts off with a 2-page spread of Splinter in the woods, and you look at the detail that they did on this, and the way the art looks with the duo shading technique that they use is just really unique and different. Then you're following along with this random guy. We don't know who this guy is. This guy isn't really actually anybody important. But then you see somebody with a bomb, and it's just a close-up of the bomb in their hands. And he has the padding around his hands like the foot soldiers do. Then you see hands holding wood and nails. Then you see somebody holding a book. So it's jumping around to all these different images. And I remember the first time I read this because black and white art can be a little hard to follow when you're not used to it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I was a little lost when I was first reading this. Like, what the heck are they showing me? And it wasn't until I read the notes after the comic that it kind of cleared up some of that. But so basically what it's doing is following April, Casey, Splinter, the Turtles, this random dude, and these other goings-on that appear to be the Foot Clan. The Turtles are boarding up some windows in the farmhouse. They're getting ready to head back to New York. Splinter is just off in the woods. This random guy is going to his apartment with some chicken to eat. April is in the airport. Casey is trying to decide what to do. He ends up starting to head back to New York. So basically everybody's starting to head back to New York. You see April going through the airport. Casey exits with his bags.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so it's all tying up. And here you get the only words you get. They're not dialogue. They're from the TV. So they're talking about it's the news. This guy's watching the news on TV and you get some of that. It just continues to follow them. This guy's eating his food. Splinter's still in the woods. April's getting ready to board the train. The Turtles are all together. Then it shows this, I guess I should say adult bookstore. That's the right way to say it. That's where the bomb is planted. And that's, the guy that they're following, he lives in that building. So he's like upstairs in his apartment. And then it's kind of bouncing around between all of them, these little images. Then you turn the page and you get this fractured image. It's like, you know, if you broke glass, you have all these different shards and the shards are reflecting different things. You got Splinter and April and, the bomb and the Turtles and this guy eating his chicken. And Casey. And then you go to the next page and it's the city and it says real big city at war. And then it's showing you around the city. You see the foot. And it's so that's diving into city at war there. But
so I got to tell you, I wasn't able to find this book and read it. So which is a little weird because, you know, I when we talk about these books, I kind of like to read it. But this is what we're going to kind of do with Mikey's Long Box. You know, we're going to pull one out, and if I can find it, great, I'll read it and I'll go along with you. If we can't, then we'll talk about how we can find it. But now that I'm listening to you speak about this, man, this sounds really good. For those of you out there who would prefer digital sometimes, most of the time, like I do, this would be a really good thing to pick up to read, and maybe all of them, and collect them all and kind of get the story. Because since I've been doing a little bit of research, I kind of know a little bit about this story. And I love how, you know, we see that, you know, I love the word you used, fractured, because it feels like the Turtles and their team, they're all kind of fractured. They're all separated. They're all going different ways. And then they're all kind of converging back into the same place that they, you know, began. So I love this kind of thought that is going on, and not having words makes it feel a whole lot, you know, you make up the words in your own head and you kind of have this feel in your own head. And, you know, each of us are different. So we're all going to have different feelings and different thoughts and the way that we portray these characters in our own minds. So I love this. This sounds really
cool. I'm only halfway done too. Oh my gosh, we're not even done yet. So then it shows the Foot Clan, and the way they do the panel is awesome because it's going down like this one standing figure, but you see the scene filling in more and more with foot soldiers, and they're entering into an area, and you see a foot soldier enter, and then he comes flying out with all of these shards sticking out of him. So I don't know exactly what those are. It looks like throwing knives or something like that. So he's dead. And then you see like, I don't even know what they're called because it doesn't say in this because there's no words, but it's like the elite guard coming out. This one guy coming out.
Okay.
With one of those like swords on a chain with a ball at the other end. And he's just, this guy is just crazy. So this one guy is fighting these just innumerable foot soldiers, killing them all. Then it gets to where it just shows these bodies all over, and he has the chain wrapped around one dead foot soldier's neck. And he looks over and there's a foot soldier, the last one standing with his swords in his hand, and he takes off running. And so this elite guard takes off running after him. They're running across the foot tops, running, jumping from building to building. And finally, elite guard guy runs him down. The foot soldier falls off the rooftop he's on, and the guard reaches down and grabs him, pulls him up and throws him onto the roof. And the foot soldier is terrified. And this guy takes his sword out and chops his head off. And then you see the image of him standing over the body with just a pool of blood on the rooftop.
Oh, man.
Then you cut back to Casey getting into his car. Casey is driving. April's airplane's taking off. The turtles are on top of an Amtrak train going back to New York. Splinter is still in the woods. The guy, done eating, I guess, sitting watching his TV news.
That's got to be the biggest bucket of chicken in the world.
It goes to the outside of his apartment window, and then it drops down the side of the building, so you see that he lives above the adult store. Then the next page is all black except for the words tick, 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 chick bomb from the page, and the building blows up, and shards are shooting out all over. And the shards, as you get to the far right side of this double page spread, one of the shards shows Casey's hand on the steering wheel. You turn the page, you see the rest of that shard. You see the shard of April. You see a shard representing the turtles. You turn the page again, you see the rest of that one. You see the shard representing Splinter. And then that goes into the last two page spread of the book, which is Splinter sitting in the woods. So this issue is bookended by Splinter sitting quietly in the woods. So you have this slow buildup of intensity that ends in this explosion. But both sides are bookended by the serenity of Splinter in the woods.
This is pretty amazing. The imagery that you explained just sounds so cool. We really got to tweet out maybe some of the images here with all these shards and the way it looks, because it sounds really cool. Unfortunately, I didn't get to read it. And this may be something that I might purchase sometime in the future. Because
yeah, 35 bucks is sounding pretty cheap now, isn't it?
Right, yeah, because of the story's so awesome. And the imagery sounds so good. That 35 is looking a whole lot like a quarter to me. Maybe not to my wife, but...
Don't worry, we won't tell.
Yeah, she'll never listen to this. Not unless I force her and she lets out that sigh. Yeah, man, this is a really good book. It sounds like I want it now.
Yeah, I picked this because I was trying to think of what to do. And this is before we decided to change the format. So I was trying to pick an issue that I could do that would be, I was trying to mix it up a little bit because I've read at least some of this wide variety of stuff. And this was the City at War. I love the City at War story. And that's, obviously it's just the beginning of it. So that's why I chose that issue. But reading through it again, it's been years since I've read this because I've been collecting these hardcovers as they come out. It's been quite a while since this one came out. I haven't reread it since I read it the first time. I'm trying to find it. 2013, it looks like, is when this came out. So this has been out for 5 or 6 years now. And so it's been years since I've read that, and reading it again, especially with a difference in what's going on in my life, where like I'm reading it with more focus and clarity than I was 6 years ago. That issue just totally blew me away. And I want to you had said earlier that I collect like everything Ninja Turtles. I don't actually. I have the hardcovers. Like that is my collection. I have digital. I buy the digitally on sales on Comixology. Like I never buy digital comics that aren't on sale, but I've been buying the hardcovers. I want to get the individual issues of The City at War again because it's so good. And the covers are awesome too. You got to see them. So,
that sounds pretty cool.
That is our first iteration of Mikey's Long Box. Do you have any questions or anything about the issue?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
So I will say to wrap this up, that one of the great things about these, Ultimate Collection hardcovers is after each issue, there's annotations by Eastman and Laird. And they'll kind of talk in general, but they'll also go page by page and talk about specific pages, specific panels, that sort of thing. So, this is my first way that I read a lot of this stuff. It was just great to like read it for the first time and then see all that other stuff. Like the Walt Simonson art that we just talked about that was used as a cover for issue 2. It was one of the variant covers. It's actually contained right on this next page too. I didn't even realize this until just now. But so it looks like that was an older piece of artwork that they used for the cover of issue number 2, but it was created sometime before that, it appears. There's some really awesome artwork in here. So it's collecting a lot of really great stuff beyond just collecting the issues too. So definitely something if you want to read the classic Ninja Turtles stuff by Eastman and Laird. Like you're not just getting the issues, you're getting a lot of extra content too on top of like hearing like the stories behind the creations. So that is Mikey's Long Box.
Next, we're going to be talking about some character spotlight, and this week we're going to be talking about Casey Jones. Let's go ahead and move on to character spotlight.
Now that was a crime, you purse-scrubbing pukes. And this is the penalty.
How about a 5-minute game misconduct for roughing, pal?
You did your job, now get out of here and let me do mine. These JV lowlifes need to be taught a lesson.
Not like that, they don't. Not from you.
It looks like you're the one who needs to be taught a lesson, pal. Class is paying 101. Your instructor's Casey Jones.
All right, this week on Character Spotlight, we're going to be talking about Casey Jones. And it's my turn. So I knew a bit about Casey Jones, but I didn't know that he had so much different iterations in the books, in the movies, TV shows, video games, all kinds of different stuff. There's some variations that kind of are very similar to one another and things of that nature, but I love his story. It's really, really cool. All right, let's go ahead and jump into this character spotlight here. So Casey Jones, his first appearance was in Raphael, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle in 1985, in April of 1985. And he was obviously created by Eastman and Laird. When Casey Jones was young, his father owned an auto shop and a group of purple dragons led by a young Hun burned down the shop. They killed Casey's father and took his mother and sister hostage. The badly beaten Casey refused to lie down and take Hun's blows. He attacked Hun with a knife and stabbing him in the neck. Enraged, Hun had beaten him within an inch of his life. The beating had a traumatic result, causing several mental and emotional disorders, explaining Casey's violent and erratic behavior. According to creator Kevin Eastman, they had intended for Casey to become a vigilante because he watched too many bad cop shows, a lot like Peter Laird did. I found a really cool little interview that Kevin Eastman did in 2009, and I kind of wanted to read that here for a second. Let me go ahead and read this. He says, "I had the idea. It was kind of a parody of all these vigilante characters that were in comics. You have the classics like Batman and Daredevil and all these characters where something tragic happened in their past and that helped them choose the path to go out and fight crime on their own. And I thought it was really funny if we had a character who was inspired to do the same, but just from watching bad TV like TJ Hooker and the A-Team. So I came up with this idea, this character who would be called Casey Jones, and he wears sweats and just something he cobbled together. And at the last minute, Pete said, hey, why don't we give him a golf bag and he'll have all kinds of weapons in. And he said, that's kind of the collaboration that we had. It was always the kind of spontaneity that somehow so many characters came together. But Casey and Raphael, he said they were fun. So that was kind of a cool thing that I found there. In his first appearance, Raphael runs into Casey beating some muggers and proceeds to stop him before the crooks are murdered. A lot like we see in the first 1990 movie there. Jones and Raphael fight several times before making peace with each other. Later, he becomes the aide to the Turtles, Splinter and O'Neil, when they're attacked by the resurrected Shredder. The seven escape and retreat to the farmhouse in Massachusetts that belonged to Casey's grandmother. And that was kind of what we were talking about earlier.
Northampton.
That's your favorite place.
Yeah, it all comes back to Northampton. Yeah, and as you said, the first movie did that, the meeting between Casey and Raph, really well. And I think that is that's kind of like the core of who Casey is, like even in any other iteration, like, you know, that's that like set the tone for it. Just like the, you know, the origin of the story, there's always certain beats to it that are always going to be there, and there's certain beats to Casey's story that are always going to be there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So Casey officially becomes a part of the Turtles family at this point, and the farmhouse acts as a second home to the group for some time. In the Mirage series, Casey is extremely violent, even more so than Raph, but he mellows out throughout the course of the series. That I thought that was really interesting to research there. In Shades of Grey, Casey accidentally kills a teenager who tried to mug him. The incident sent him into a drunken spiral, damaging his relationship with April O'Neil. After some time, Casey meets a pregnant woman named Gabrielle, with whom he falls in love with and marries. Gabrielle dies during childbirth, and Casey is left to take care of her daughter, whom he names Shadow. After some time, Casey repairs his relationship with April, and they begin dating. By Volume 4, he and April are married, and they raise Shadow as their daughter, and they try to have children of their own.
So interesting thing about that, because we were sharing some of this info back and forth. So volume one is the first Mirage. Volume two is the second Mirage, which is like it follows right into it. Volume three is the Image series. Volume four is Peter Laird's Mirage. So even though it's still technically canon and all that, that's like Peter Laird starting to do his own story. So like at that point where it says like everything from that point on, it's Peter Laird doing his thing. Eventually you get to the IDW series, and that obviously is like restarting the story. So it's interesting how it all goes together. Super then you get to that point where it's like it's still technically like continuing off of the original Mirage canon, but it gets wild.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it. It's pretty cool, though. Dreamwave Productions, you touched on this a little bit in the last couple of episodes there. We kind of get like a little bit of a repeat of this origin story here, just a tiny bit here. It says the fourth issue of Dreamwave Production series based on the 2003 animated series focused entirely on Casey Jones. When Casey was a little kid, he was worried and told his dad that he should give in to the Purple Dragons and their protection racket. His father becomes violent and tells Casey that he's playing on his team. Joneses never give in. Nearly punching Casey in a violent rage, his father hears something and figures it's the Purple Dragons trying to break into the store. Casey watches his father's store burns to the ground. The Purple Dragons' leader, Hun, smacks Casey aside, demanding his father to pay up. Casey breaks a bottle and stabs Hun in the leg with it. Furious, Hun has his thugs beat Casey to a bloody pulp. Casey is then later diagnosed with brain damage from the beating. Shortly after that, his father goes searching for Hun to get revenge and vanishes. Casey's mom then goes searching for her husband and then vanishes as well. Casey drifts off into a delusional state, reassuring himself that his father and mother are still alive. They're just waiting for Casey to clean the streets of all of the Purple Dragons until they can return. I thought that was a pretty interesting take.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I don't know anything about that. Like, I haven't even touched on that at all.
Maybe I'll use some trivia from that run then.
Yeah, you definitely get me with that stuff.
Okay, here in the IDW, we kind of touched on that a little bit here when we talked about the first arc. So after Casey's mother dies from cancer, his father became an alcoholic who would vent his daily frustration on his son by beating him. Casey was saved by Raphael from another violent beating. The two quickly become friends and they become fellow vigilantes. And obviously we're going to be talking about the IDW run here, so I'm not going to get too much into that. So in television, in the 1987 animated series, Casey Jones is a crazed vigilante with a Dirty Harry-like persona.
Yep, Clint Eastwood knockoff, totally.
Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry, all the same, right?
Super cheesy.
He goes after all sorts of criminals, from robbers to litter bugs. Yeah, funny, right? I thought that was hilarious. He never takes his mask off on screen, even when he goes undercover in a business suit. appearing only in 5 episodes of the series, this version of Casey does not play a central role as he does in the comic book counterpart. He doesn't have a friendship with Raphael, nor a relationship with April. He doesn't even encounter her until the 5th season. So that, I thought that was pretty interesting there. In the 2003 TMNT animated series, Jones has a much more important role. Raphael first meets Casey while the vigilante tries to stop a mugging by the Purple Dragons. Seeing a lot of himself in Casey, Raphael tries to reason with him and prevent him from letting his anger get the best of him. Raphael himself had just severely injured Michelangelo and was overwhelmed by guilt. Casey's backstory is fleshed out over a course of the series. When he was a child, his father's shop was burned down by the Hun and the Purple Dragons for being denied protection money. Does this sound like we've said this before? So despite being threatened, his father later went to the police, and later on it was implied that he was killed for doing so, which gave Casey his hatred for crime and created a lifelong feud against the Purple Dragons. In the 2012 TMNT series, Casey Jones appears in the second season of the series. Raphael spots some graffiti on a sewer wall and that says, "Jones is everywhere," which also had the iconic hockey mask painted beside it. Casey believes he's the last hope for New York City. He rescues April from Mutagen Man and defeats him all on his own. He becomes a vigilante who hunts criminals, mutants, and anything he thinks threatens his city. In seasons 2, episode The Good, Bad, and Casey Jones. What does that sound like? He becomes an ally to the Turtles, specifically Raphael, who becomes his best friend. So we kind of see an ongoing pattern here, right? There's always some references to like Dirty Harry type characters, and we see a kind of ongoing origin here. He fights the Huns because of some kind of protection racket.
Yeah, you know, you get those, the beats that matter stay present. You get some really wild stuff around them sometimes, too.
Right. Let's go ahead and move on to the films. We've all watched the 1990s films, right? So Casey Jones has lead roles in 4 of the 6 Ninja Turtle movies. In the first film, he is portrayed by Elias Cotes. This is the Casey Jones I know. He's a former professional ice hockey player who had turned vigilante after his career nearly ended due to an injury. He encounters Raphael while attacking some purse snatchers. Raphael stops Casey from harming the thieves, where Casey turns his aggression on Raphael. In the third film, Casey once again is portrayed by Elias Cotes. And he wasn't in the second film. That was very interesting. At the Turtles' request, he assists Splinter in watching over 4 Japanese honor guards that were transported from the past to the present. Casey appears in the 2007 TMNT animated film voiced by Chris Evans. When the film takes place, Casey is in a relationship with April and he works for her shipping company as a delivery man. He meets Raphael as the Night Watcher and teams with Raph and eventually the rest of the Turtles. Casey Jones appears in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows sequel to the 2014 film, and he's portrayed by Arrow star Stephen Amell. How did you like that version?
Not good.
Oh, man. I love that we saw Casey Jones back on film, but I gotta tell you, I like Stephen Amell as Arrow. I don't know if I like him as Casey Jones. No,
the way they wrote Casey Jones, I mean, he was either a cop or a security guard in that movie. So already he's being written in a way that just doesn't suit anything that we is. And it's not that he needs to be the exact same character, but it just doesn't really fit. You know, like we said, there are certain beats that are always there in who he is, and it kind of takes that away.
Yeah.
But then Stephen Amell just didn't not so good of a job portraying Casey Jones. And I don't know if it was he was following direction, that's what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've watched him in Arrow. I'm not a fan of Arrow, but I don't have anything against Stephen Amell. I've watched him be a professional wrestler, and I found him pretty good at that. That was entertaining, you know, the Hollywood guy in the match. But yeah, I didn't care for him as Casey Jones.
I gotta tell you, when I first heard that he was gonna be Casey Jones, I was like, man, that is a great pick. That would be really cool to see him do Casey Jones. So I might not know exactly what this is, so don't please take this as a grain of salt. But I almost think that the way he was portrayed there was direction. Only because, I mean, look how great he does with the Arrow. He's like this brooding character. He is the Arrow. They're probably saying, okay, we want you to play Casey, but you're not going to play Arrow here. Do not play Green Arrow here. So they had to, you know, tell him to play something completely different from what he usually does. And I think that was kind of a misstep there. I think they could have just let it be natural and stayed true to the character a little bit, you know, stay true to, you know, he is a kind of a loose cannon. He's a, you know, he comes in there, kicks butt, and he takes names, you know, so stay true to that, I think. And if they would have let him do that, I think it would have been awesome.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of problems with that movie. But the best thing to do is look at what things we can enjoy in that movie and forget the problems.
Everybody sits there and hates on these movies, dude. I love those movies. They're cheesy. I love it. I loved it, man. Did you hear what's going on with the movies now?
I hear there's going to be a new reboot.
They're rebooting it all over
again.
They should.
They shouldn't continue on with those. Like those. And I just like you, go into those two movies wanting to enjoy them for what there is to enjoy. So, like, I've watched them and I've enjoyed them. Doesn't mean I think that they're good or great movies or that there's not flaws, but I'd rather ignore the flaws and just enjoy what I can enjoy. But I'm so glad hearing that if they're going to make another movie, it's not a third one of that. And I hope that they get somebody producing it that actually wants to make a Ninja Turtle movie and not whatever the hell Michael Bay wanted to do.
Yeah, they got some pretty good guys on there, it looks like. I sent you a link earlier in the day, and it was pretty cool. We won't get into that. We might talk about that another time, but we won't get into that here right now. But let's go ahead and move on to this. So, like you said, Jones is portrayed as a hothead prison guard who dreams of being a NYC detective. All right, on to video games. Casey Jones is a playable character in the NES and Sega Genesis versions of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters, and he appears in the background in Donatello's stage in the Super NES version. In the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Manhattan missions, he rescues the turtles if they lose all their health. In the 2003 video game and the Game Boy Advance Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, he is a boss in Raph's story mode and becomes a playable player in story mode if Raph defeats level 1. He is an unlockable alternate for Raphael in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2 Battle Nexus. He also appears in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 Mutant Nightmare and the app TMNT Legends. He is a playable character in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Melee, the Wii and PS2 fighting game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mashup. So that is Casey Jones.
And Casey was prevalent in the issues we talked about today, so an apt time for his character spotlight. Now, are you ready for some trivia?
Okay, everybody. I'm going to play TMNT Quiz.
You've guessed it. It's time for some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trivia. Who's going to come out on top? Sit back, have a slice of jelly bean pizza, and have some fun with us.
All right, so I have a little more questions than we usually do, and I pulled these right from that arc that we read.
All right.
Some of them should be super easy. Some of them will be a little bit more challenging.
Okay.
All right, so I'll dive right in here. This one had better be really easy for you.
Okay.
Who was the first villain the Turtles face in the IDW series?
Oh, that's easy. That's got to be Hobbs. Old Hob.
Yep, Old Hob. Easy. So this one's a tough one. How many major characters get introduced in the first issue?
Ooh, that's okay. So we've got Baxter Stockman, Chet / Fugitoid, Casey Jones, April O'Neil. Are we counting the four turtles and Splinter?
Yep. So that's four. That's five. Yeah, plus the other ones.
So what am I up to? Nine. Who else do we got? Hob, Old Hob. If he's not a major character. So was that 10?
No, he's major.
10.
Yep.
How many more? Who else did we see? Oh my gosh. I can't remember who else we saw. I think that's 10. I'm going to say 10.
All right, so the answer is 13.
Ooh, who did I miss?
Would you like to know? Okay, so we're going to go through. So Old Hob, uh-huh. The four turtles and Splinter. So right there, we're at six. Let me turn some pages here. You get Chet, a.k.a. Fugitoids. So that's seven. April makes eight. Turn some more pages. Baxter Stockman makes nine. Now, here's one you wouldn't get, probably. The other scientist there, Lindsay, oh. She becomes a major character.
Okay.
So that's, was that up to 10?
Yep.
You get Casey, and you get Hun. His dad is Hun.
Oh, Hun was in this
one. I
swear
there was one more. Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
I believe I said all of them, so maybe it was 12 and not 13. 12. I think I might have double counted somebody there. But still, yeah, so there were characters in there that you wouldn't have realized were even a character beyond just like, you know, surface level there.
Cool.
All right. So what villain is referenced but not seen?
Referenced but not seen. Ooh, that one's a little tough. Oh, okay. Krang.
Yes, very good. He is on Burnout Island, which by now in the series we're very familiar with. But yeah, so he's mentioned, but he's never seen. So what two goodies does Raph pull out of the dumpster that reference TMNT heritage?
Is it pizza and a Cowabunga t-shirt?
Yep, you got it. Good job. Sweet. There. This one you actually got as we were talking through it, so this should be easy. What character is assuming a false identity in the first issue?
It's got to be Chet Allen.
Yep, Fugitoid. What major villains are introduced in issue 2?
That's a tough one. And I completely spaced on that, and I don't really know.
So issue 2, we get to see the Foot Clan as they invade April's work. Okay. to steal the turtles. We don't hear they're the Foot Clan yet. So once again, we get a lot of different characters introduced that we're not explicitly told who they are.
They come in the second one when they enter into the lab. Okay.
So next question. This one should be a very easy one. Which turtle is missing from the family?
That's easy. Venus. No, just kidding. Raphael.
Yeah, and I put that one at that point because we actually don't know clearly who's missing until the second issue.
Yeah, okay.
Assuming that we don't know enough about turtles to tell the difference. But of course we do. But, you know, if you're reading this for the first time, that's where it's made clear who is missing. Now, this one, we actually discussed this some throughout talking about these issues. But how long has his family been searching for him?
Ooh, that's a hard one. Because I thought... Because they throw out, I think they throw out 18 months.
Is that your final answer?
I think I'm going to say 18 months.
It is 15 months. They do specifically say 15 months.
I thought it was 18 months. Dang it.
So that's my trivia for getting so, well,
awesome.
Not really to get revenge on you. It's all right out of the book. Thought I'd be trying to kind of tough with a couple of them. But for the most part, like if you're paying attention to the story, you should have picked most of those up. A couple of them you would have had to really be paying attention. Would you like to hear what you would have won?
Yes.
If you had successfully answered all of these questions, you would have won the complete Ninja Turtle comic book library delivered to you by the Foot Clan, who would then kill you and steal your mutated pet animals.
That's awesome.
Wouldn't do you much good, but for that brief moment, boy, would you be a collector.
Right. Awesome. That was really fun, dude. That was pretty cool because I just read it and I read it a handful of times and there were some things that I still didn't remember. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, you did. Honestly, you did pretty good. There were some of them that I thought you'd struggle more with that you didn't, and the ones that you didn't get were fairly tricky ones.
Yeah. Some of them you have to know a little bit of the history a little bit there. So it was pretty cool, man. That was awesome. Good one.
All right, so that is our new show format, talking about the IDW series.
Yeah.
Throwing in the history, talking about some characters, stumping each other with some tricky, not fair trivia.
That was pretty cool, man. I enjoyed this new format that we had going. It kind of gives us a little bit more of it's going to help me, obviously, because I'm going to be jumping into this book pretty good. That's one thing that I wanted to do for quite some time is to read something in reading order, and I love that the turtles do that. There's not a lot of books out there. There's not a lot of companies out there that puts these books in reading order, especially with something like the turtles where they have so many different tie-ins and things of that nature.
Yeah, IDW does a really good job with that. Another IDW series that I've been reading that way is G.I. Joe, because they collected the same way where they're mixing in any G.I. Joe that's being published in the way that you should be reading it. So IDW is great for that. I suggest to anybody, if you want to read any of the things IDW publishes that they collect into these collections, it's a good way to go. Everybody should definitely check that out, whether you want to read Ninja Turtles or G.I. Joe or whatnot. But yeah, one of the things I've learned doing podcasts, as long as I've done them and listening to the ones I've listened to, is if you want to do something for yourself to get into something, sharing that with others is a great way to go. So
definitely,
you needed to read through these Ninja Turtles. We might as well make use of it and share it with everybody else that's reading along. So,
yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, so for next time, you guys know what issues we're doing. The next four in the IDW collection, which will be two issues of the main series and two of the micro series following two of the turtles. So read up on those. Who knows what we'll pull out of Mikey's long box next time. We'll have a new character spotlight. We'll have some more trivia. We'll have a good time. You can find us on Twitter at Who's Paul. You are on Twitter at
JoeyGalvez84.
We are on Twitter on the podcast at
@ShellShockPod.
I totally couldn't remember what it was, so I figured I would just kind of set you up to say it. That worked out well, so you can find this podcast and all of our other podcasts at NerdyLegion.com. You can find my podcast, Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World, which we just recorded another episode earlier today, as a matter of fact. So I'm having a podcast prevalent day today.
Sounds awesome.
You can find the Bat Pod with you and Bill also at NerdyLegion.com.
Definitely.
So check those out. Check out other Nerdy Legion podcasts. Dig way back in the archives and you can check out Ivar's Long Box and hear what that was like. But that's way back there. I don't know if you can find it anymore. I don't even know Martin Hoso's anymore. So anyways,
if you guys want to be a part of Shell Shock, you guys can email us at shellshockpod@gmail.com. You can also give us a shout out at our voicemail, which is 480-442-1584. That phone number again is 480-442-1584. Drop us a line, give us some suggestions, let us know how we're doing. And you can always go on to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. We're waiting for you guys to get on there and let us know what we're doing here is pretty good. Or if you want to send us some hate mail, do whatever you'd like. So for this episode, this third installment of Shell Shock, we will see you guys later. And Paul, I say Gungala to you, buddy.
Gungala. Gungala indeed.